Get ready for takeoff. This is a First Class Podcast. All things Winnipeg Jets hockey. The flight starts now. Welcome to the First Class Podcast, all things Winnipeg Jets hockey. March 11th, Sunday, while we're doing the recording here. I almost want to say I should mention that a little more often, because I know we go through, you know, try and do it once a week. We swapped our Thursday for a Sunday because the Jets had a game, and we've got five games to catch up on, and four of those were on the road trip. The Jets had played Friday before leaving town against Detroit in the beginning of March, and then started on their road trip with games against Carolina, the Rangers, New Jersey, and Philadelphia. Tim Bigelow, along with Warren Smith, and we're ready to crank up another edition of this. The Jets still have a pair of games left on their road trip, including games in Washington and Nashville, and those are going to be back-to-back, Monday and Tuesday night. And then they come back home. They've only got about 14 games left in the season at this point now, but we're going to go through these games in quick order, and of course, tons of stuff, guys. Get healthy, guys. Get injured again. Lots of stuff going on that with the Winnipeg Jets. Even before we went to air, me and Warren were talking a bit about understanding the Atlanta records and Atlanta Jets records and how some of those are falling down this year, and a lot of them have a chance to be broken this year by current Winnipeg Jet players, and how we're a little more, I guess, fans of acknowledging that history now with the Jets starting to do well, really feel like it's our franchise and less connected with Phoenix. And we had talked about that this before we went on the air about, actually, well, last podcast, we spent a good part of the last game with Nashville talking about Keith Tkachuk and how he wasn't good for the city. And really, I had mentioned to you just before we went on the air that when Timo Salonen got traded to Anaheim right before the team left, that actually made it a lot easier to not really follow the Jets franchise when they went down to Phoenix. I'm a big believer in that.
If you had to pick one reason, personally, if I had to pick one reason, yeah, when I was a kid, Timo Salonen, Salonen was everybody's favorite. When he was traded, I think everybody felt a little heartbroken. It was like the writing was on the wall. You know, we all had hopes that the Jets franchise would be saved. I remember being in the class when I was in grade four. All the politicians were jumping on the Save the Jets bandwagon, and we were doing like little posters and write-ups about it in class. Because it hit home. I mean, we're talking about elementary school, and everybody was talking about it every day. Are they going to stay? Are they going to go? When Salonen was traded, he was the face of the franchise. And when he left it, you know, it was like the writing was on the wall. Things are over. And passing that on to Keith Tkachuk, he just didn't have that same character. He was a hell of a power forward, but nobody felt that kind of connection. Shane Doan, later the face of the franchise for the Phoenix Coyotes, he only played a season with the Jets, so it was, you know, we didn't feel that real strong connection to him. I know some, when they left, cheered for the Phoenix Coyotes, but I wasn't one of them. And
I wasn't either.
So
I'm happy to watch them take what was a competitive franchise and make it non-competitive consistently year after year after year. I actually kind of get some enjoyment on how mismanaged that franchise is.
They always joke about it being like an ex-girlfriend situation. Like when they went to Phoenix, it was like that girlfriend was stolen from you, and they go to Phoenix, you don't have too many nice things to say about them anymore. And when Atlanta came here, I never felt any connection to Atlanta, but as these years have gone by, and now we have some players that are creeping up on the numbers and passing some of those records, there's a little bit of a connection now to that Thrashers franchise, for myself personally, and you were saying kind of the same kind of vibe.
Because I never really paid attention to Atlanta, because I never knew they were going to become the Winnipeg Jets. You know, if you could have known in advance that this Atlanta franchise was going to be the Jets, you probably would have been watching and been like, okay, what are they doing? Who are they drafting? All that stuff. Like, you would pay more attention to it. So you go back through, like, Kerry Lettinen, it skipped my mind that Kerry Lettinen even played goal for the Atlanta franchise. And here with the guy, up until, well, a couple games ago, held the franchise record for most wins in the season. Now he doesn't, but that's one of those records.
And when it goes to, you know, most goals in the season, everybody's watching Patrick Laine. We were looking at the totals off air, and we're thinking, you know, Heatley probably, I remember him having a 50-goal season. Turns out that was in Ottawa, but he did put up 41 goals as an Atlanta Thrasher before making the big bucks in Ottawa, signing the big contract there. And Ilya Kovalchuk, he was an absolute phenom. As soon as the skates hit the ice for the Atlanta Thrashers franchise, and, you know, he's lost some of that sort of love and affection from a lot of people because of the fact that he's one of the many guys that left to go to the KHL and sort of left his team hanging, right? You were an ex-New Jersey Devils fan, so that probably didn't sit well with you. But he is the leader of this franchise, scoring 52 goals in what season was it?
Two. It was two seasons. I'm going to have to pull this up. You know what? Before we went to air, I had Mark Savard's assist totals up.
And the reason why we're making this comparison is because this version, this Jets 2.0, connected to the Atlanta Thrashers, now we actually have some guys. Brian Little just this season passed the games played record. Helly just surpassed Lettinen, as you mentioned, for most wins in a season. And we're looking at Blake Wheeler's assist totals. He passed his own personal best for assists in a season. And so we took a look at who had the most assists. And Mark Savard, you look back and you think, man, he was just another guy who kind of slipped under the radar for the point totals he put up and when he put them up. But he had the concussion issues later on in his career and kind of just disappeared, but he put up some amazing season, including a 69 assist season or something along those lines for the Thrashers.
Yeah.
So Wheels has a ways to go. We're looking at his season, how great he's doing, but he's gonna have to go on a similar tear to what Line A will have to do to catch up to Ducky's team totals in scoring. So it's just a really interesting time. This is the first time that we can talk about these sorts of things. 52 goals, probably outside the realm of possibility for Patrick Line A this season, but going forward, you know, very plausible.
In his first season with the Thrashers, by the way, Kovalchuk had 29 goals in his first season. His totals were above that pretty much for the rest of his career. And he only played 65 games that first season. His second season, he had 38, followed that up with 41. 2005-2006, he had 52. Dropped off, only 42 the next year, but in 2007-2008, he got another 52.
Only 42.
Put up over 40 the next year when Atlanta dealt him to Jersey. And then his numbers were actually under 40 goals for the last two full seasons with Jersey. Then he retired to go play in the KHL, retired from the National Hockey League. This summer, he becomes unrestricted because it's been enough years now since 2012-2013. I believe it was 5 years, which would make sense, 2018. So right now, if you were to, before the trade deadline, if you had wanted to get Kovalchuk, you would have had to make a trade and sign with New Jersey and they would have got compensation. There's been talk that he wants to come back to the National Hockey League. As of this summer, he can sign with anybody. From what I hear, the Rangers are one of the teams that would be big on trying to bring him on. They, of course, moved a lot of players out at the trade deadline, so they'd be one of those teams that would have the cap space to do it. Actually, no. Whoever the new GM of the Montreal Canadiens will be, I'll just throw that out there right now, he would be a guy that I would be going to look at trying to bring on and get some offense for the Canadiens.
Or if there isn't a new GM, Mark Bergevin, I mean, that would be a splash move. Splash move that he's looking for. Get Kovalchuk from the KHL, bring him over. It sounds from ownership like they're saying all the things that point in the direction that Montreal fans have to stick with the process that is Marc Bergevin, because it sounds like they're talking about their draft plan for next year and, you know, going forward, they feel like they have a lineup that can contend.
That's what Bergevin said at the beginning of this season. He's like, well, we're not in that first group of Stanley Cup teams, but we're in the mix of all the other competitive playoff teams, is what he said. And you looked at their lineup. Remember when they were playing against us the first time around, I just had lost it because I was just like, this guy's off his rocker. Bad moves, whether it's trades, whether it's signings. You look at the problems the Montreal Canadiens have, it's all GM-based.
I think the French-Canadian deal gets them an extra year, 2 years. He's going to make a push, going to make some big acquisition in the summer, I'm sure.
Well, that's one guy that would be a big acquisition, oddly enough. I kind of joke, not that we have the cap space, but I thought it would have been funny if we hadn't made the move for Paul Stastny to have just said to Kovalchuk, technically could have signed a deal to come back. He could have come back and, you know, maybe he doesn't want Line A to catch his goals, career goal stats, come play in Winnipeg, win a Stanley Cup.
There's actually a parallel. I find a way periodically to throw in the NBA because I'm a big Raptors fan, but there was talks about Vince Carter coming back to Toronto just because intriguing storyline of him returning to win a championship in Toronto. And yeah, that Kovalchuk scenario of him returning and being a depth player on the Jets and maybe winning a cup with them. I don't know if it has the same kind of, you know, run right now when it comes to general talk about Kovalchuk's return. I don't think there's a place for him in Winnipeg, just like there isn't a place that kind of said, maybe down the road, Vince, if you manage to stay in the league a few more years, you might get a chance to play with the Raps, but not this year when they're contending. And I think that's the same goes for Kovalchuk. Yeah, maybe the New New York Rangers or Montreal Canadiens, somebody like that.
So Laine is now tied with Ovechkin with 40 goals for the year as they head into their head-to-head matchup, second game that they're going to play against each other this year. That's on tap tonight when you're listening to the podcast.
Could have set that up better.
Yeah. Ovi managed in the last game to not get any more goals, so that helped. Ilya won the Rocket Richard in 2003-2004, by the way. And that's one of the years he only had 41.
There you go. And then this year we got Laine pushing the aforementioned Ovechkin for the Rocket Richard this year.
That will go down to the wire for sure. He's definitely picked it up. Paul Statsy's definitely helping with that as well. And there's no argument on that. Whether or not he can get to 52, he's got an outside shot this year. As far as I'm concerned, it's just how many seasons before Laine gets to Kovalchuk's totals. That's why I said if I was Ilya Kovalchuk, I'd want to come back and maybe play a year or two to get that career goals in the franchise up a little higher.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Steven Stamkos is an incredible shooter as well, who put up 60 in a season. So it's really not outside the realm of possibility that in a year or two down the road, I mean, he's already pushing the limits right now, getting close to that total. I think he can easily put up 60. That 52, I think, it's just a matter of time.
You know, there's enough games left. If we look at it right now, even if he gets a goal game, and he's been finally getting some multi-goal games, which we're going to be talking about, but there's enough games left in the year that he doesn't have to score every game, and he's still going to get up to 52 because there's 14 games left.
Dale Hawerchuk, Ducky, connected to the old franchise 1.0. He's still got the record for team goals, second overall ever, Dale Hawerchuk.
And that's combined seasons, too. That's first and second.
He's past Crosby. Now he's tied with Wayne Gretzky and Brian Bellows. And once he gets one more goal, he surpasses them. And the next one on the list is Dale Hawerchuk.
The trivia, and I know I didn't know this, but Jimmy Carson is a guy in Los Angeles that actually holds the record for most goals as a teenager in the National Hockey League.
And you know who he was traded for back in the day, right?
I don't. I really...
You don't know?
I don't. Is Carson, was Carson part of the...
He was the key piece in the Wayne Gretzky
deal. Oh, he was? Okay.
And then he went on to score, I believe, I'm not Googling this right now, but I think he had some 30, 40 goal seasons that were decent. But at that time, that would probably equate to now a 15 or 20 goal season. So he came out firing, and then, I mean, that's a heavy weight to carry, trying to be the guy to replace Wayne Gretzky. But obviously, he had the most goals ever by a team. So along with some hype, he had some substance before that move was made. So it wasn't all one-sided, but you don't want to be the other guy in the equation in a Wayne Gretzky deal.
So the Jets playoff experience gained 55 games by adding Paul Statsy. That's his number of playoff games that he's played. That is tops on the current Jet roster. Dustin Byfuglien is next at 43, Matt Hendricks at 34, and then Wheeler and Perreault round out that with 25.
As important to note is that all those games were played on a Central Division team, mostly matched up against other Central Division teams.
Yeah, because he's been in St. Louis all these years.
So tendencies, all that plays a factor in big time face-off situations. He's come onto our team and he's all of a sudden our number one face-off guy. If you're in crunch time and you need a guy, and people have talked about this, you can easily roll Scheifele over to the wing and now Stastny can take on that pressure. We'll use that to our advantage, really. So that's another weapon, another bullet for Paul Maurice to use.
Just one of the many stats that we got to the podcast here. We're going to have tons of them.
We're not total stats guys, but there's just a lot of shit showing up right now. There's just so many things happening at this point in the season that it's worth noting.
Oh, you know what I also wanted to mention? Because Ken Weeb actually replied while I was on the road. Ken Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun. Remember a couple podcasts ago we were trying to figure out after the trade deadline, or maybe it was the last one. I think it was even the one before the trade deadline. When you're like, okay, but what about, do we have waivers? What happens after as far as the roster? And I kept looking it up. I'm like, Ken Weeb's a smart guy. He's going to have the answer for this. So I sent him like a message on Twitter and said, hey, can you clarify this? Now that we're past the trade deadline, if everybody gets healthy, do we have to have guys that are going to get cut? You know, like if, you know, Matthias and Dano and everybody else was healthy, we'd have way more than 23 guys. But 50 player contracts, regardless of health, they can only dress a 23 any given game, but they don't have to clear waivers. They can practice with the team the rest of the way out. So as long as you're under the cap, we're good. So we can have these extra bodies around. And still, when, as you know, games go down and Tucker Pullman gets pulled back up or Hutchinson gets pulled back up, if there's more injuries, we can still pull guys up, send them back down without having to worry about waivers, do conditioning stints, all that kind of stuff is completely completely allowable for the rest of the year. So we don't have to worry about guys getting healthy and that there might be four guys not playing a game healthy versus before the trade deadline.
I've had a lot of people ask me about that since we found that out. That's an extremely important point, because all year you're battling with that. You're going, should I send him down? Should I not send him down? I mean, it depends whether they have a two-way contract or a one-way contract. We were talking so many times about Dano and Matthias. What's the situation with them? You know, are they going to clear? Are we going to get something back for them? Do they have to make a trade now? Otherwise, you're just burning them. So, yeah, right on. Thanks, Ken Weeb.
So we'll give a shout out to him for answering that question. Then he corrected me on my joking, because the line juggling when Scheifele got re-injured going into the, the Jersey game, I guess.
Yeah, Scheifele went out in the New York Rangers game.
So I'd kind of just posted up a tweet, because a couple other guys had done some line combos, and then Ken had corrected me and said that he definitely 100% knew that Wheeler was staying on the wing, because he was at Maurice's pregame press conference and basically said Wheeler's staying on the wing and that Little was going to go up. And then they had some fun with that, but we'll talk about that in a bit. We got to talk about this game of Friday with Detroit. Detroit, they're in rebuild mode. They've got some veteran pieces and a lot of young guys they're trying to incorporate into the lineup after, you know, they spent years being a playoff team in the National Hockey League for years and years. And Ken Holland in Detroit, he's one of those guys that could get late draft round picks and end up having them be, you know, stars in the National Hockey League, where he just would be great on the drafting, even with late round picks, because they were always in the playoffs. They are 26, 20, 17, and 10 going into this. Fifth in the Atlantic, well out of the playoff race, 13-14-2 on the road, and they had lost one as far as a streak coming into Winnipeg, a 2-1 loss to the St. Louis Blues. 7 points back of the wildcard spot, so they're definitely not in the hunt for the playoffs again this year. They, of course, sent Mrazek to Philly before the deadline, and it actually didn't move their defenseman out of there. They actually had some talk that Green was going to get up, be on the move, and then he never moved. So I guess they didn't get what they wanted as far as an offer.
They got a hell of a lot for Thomas Tatar, though. Vegas just handed it to him. First, second, and third round pick. Still, that one to me still is pretty crazy.
Again, he's another guy that wasn't even on the board as guys that they were thinking were moving.
So like you said, similar to maybe St. Louis and New York basically putting it out there that the season's done. You know, Detroit's known that for a while. Good move by the GM. Like, no one to hold him, no one to fold him, and not getting rid of. But Thomas Tatar, he's a decent producing player for them. A 20 goal scorer. But three draft picks like that at this point in time when they're in a full-on rebuild, that was a good decision by their GM.
Yeah, for Thomas Tatar. I think it's a good move. Detroit's sitting 27th on goals for going into this game in the league. The Jets are third. Their power play for Detroit's 22nd. The Jets is second. The goals against Detroit's sitting at 17th going into this game. The Jets are at 6th. And their penalty kill was 23rd in the league. Jets sitting at 11th. So if you're wondering about this, on paper, you know, Winnipeg should be beating Detroit. Having said that, Detroit beat Winnipeg in December 5-1 in one of the Jets' worst road games of the year. Like, when you list bad road games, Jets were 6-4 in their last 10 going into this game. Of course, that 6-5 loss to Nashville was the game before, but still 23-7-2 at home and having a great record at home. Alrighty, the laundry list of injuries before we go into this game. Trouba was still out. Lowry is out. Tanev was still out. Thias, Mason, and Enstrom. Some of these guys come in and out in this whole podcast. Jimmy Howard gets a start for the Detroit Red Wings, 18-20-7. Helle, 32-10-8 going into this game. Jets get up 2-1 in the first period in this game. They weren't really skating. This is what I noticed in this game. And I thought they were kind of standing still. And they still managed to come out of the first period with a lead. They were outshot 17-12. And this was a chippy game off the start. 28 first period faceoffs.
That's called no flow.
Yeah. No flow. Detroit even scores first. Nicholas Cronwall got his third on a power play. And Hendy had taken a penalty for slashing when he knocked a stick out of Ouellette's hand. So Detroit goes on the power play. They get it. And Cronwall gets a shot through traffic. He gets the puck back and then reloads it. And again through traffic, he actually does get it over the blocker up top on Connor Hellebuck. Zetterberg and Abdelkader get the assist on it. You know what? I don't know a lot about the Detroit Red Wings these days, other than I do remember Cronwall and Zetterberg when they were good, and they're getting on in age, but they've got some great names on their team, like Abdelkader.
Yeah, and Athenas Ehu.
Yeah, I got a pun based on his name later on.
All right.
The Jets, though, get a pair of goals 35 seconds apart within a minute and a half of Detroit going up.
Quick strike, baby. Opportunistic.
The Jets gain the offensive zone, and there's a tip point shot by Ehlers, and it goes wide. Myers holds it in and gets it to Laine, who circles in the slot and then puts a beauty wrister glove side. That would be his 32nd of the year from Tyler Myers. 1-1 game. You want to add something about that one? Because Laine scores a bunch of beauty goals. I mean, you'd just be like, this podcast is brought to you by Patrick Laine Goalscore.
Yeah, I know. As I was writing my notes for like extra info, I put things to talk about to go along with our, you know, breakdown of the games. Is it's just like I kept writing Laine's name down. Like, we're going to be talking about Laine a lot this podcast. C'est la vie. It's a good thing.
The other guy you want to talk a bit about is Ben Sherratt.
Yeah, Ben Sherratt. His game's been really solid this season. I thought it's been a great bounce back year. You know, he had a bit of an off year last year after coming into the league pretty hot, playing on the first unit with Dustin Byfuglien. And, you know, over the stretch, he went on a mini 5-point streak, which, you know, many people might not write home about, but I mean, as a defenseman and as a third pairing and a guy that's been a seventh defenseman, that's a pretty good stretch. And I just like the way he's been extremely physical. He's been a force out there for the Jets. And then on top of that, he started to use his shot more. He's being more aggressive with his shot. And when you have a 108-mile-an-hour slap shot, you got to use that thing. On top of that, he's making really good reads and really good pinches. And yeah, I've really liked what Ben Sherratt's brought to the table. I actually think he's made it very tough on them to take him out of the lineup when they get healthy. And I loved Kulikov's game for a big chunk of the year, but when they are healthy and Truba comes out, I don't think it's automatic that Sherratt comes out. Been really impressed with his play this year.
Right before the goal, Detroit doesn't play a puck as Perreault high sticks it. It creates an offensive zone faceoff in the Detroit zone for the Winnipeg Jets. Jack Rozovic gets it over to Brian Little, and then Little gets it across to Sherratt, and then he unloads bar down from the point. So it was a bullet, and it goes in. And he's been shooting a lot more lately. But again, play by Perreault that actually gets that offensive zone faceoff. And then, Little to Roslo. Roslo to Little. And then, yeah, Sherratt.
Confidence. No hesitation on a shot. That's actually something that's been noticeable too. You know, maybe in the past he tries to move that puck, kick it back down low. But now when he has a chance to take a shot on that, he's just ripping it.
That was Ben Sherratt's first of the year. And technically would have completed the statistic that all the Jets have a goal this year of everybody who's played. However, because of the trade deadline, we can kind of put one little antidote to that.
Is that asterisk or what?
Well, because Joe Morrow actually scored goals in Montreal, he hasn't scored one as a Winnipeg Jet.
Fair enough.
However, he's got 5 on the year. He just doesn't have one as a Jet. He would be the only guy right now that hasn't scored a goal for the Jets this year. And of course, he's only played a handful of games now as a depth defenseman. Second period, the Jets continue to get goals and goals from defensemen, which is something that they haven't done a ton of throughout the year. I will say that Detroit, right before the Jets get their third goal, Tyler Myers is a great back check, and that allows no shot to be taken as Detroit had a 2-on-1 shorthanded. Cronwald gone off for high sticking Joel Armia behind the wing's net. So the Jets continue the pressure after the power play is over in the cycle, and we're talking a long time. How much? They had a minute and 21 seconds of puck possession. There were 27 touches, meaning that's how many times it was passed between the Jets as the power play was ending, and they're going back 5-on-5.
Absolutely amazing sequence. And you know what's funny is that this happens against the Detroit Red Wings, and the Detroit Red Wings in their prime, in those dynasty years, were known for puck possession. They actually, to some extent, changed the game. A lot of teams at that time were doing the dump and chase, and Detroit never let go of the puck. They would regroup it. We see it now with Nikolaj Ehlers on the power play all the time, and it's a move that you see across the league where they kick it back. Nobody else in the league did that, but back then the Detroit Red Wings were one of the first teams to really try to utilize their speed, and they thought that giving up the puck was a crime in Detroit. And now during the sequence, very similar to Winnipeg Jets, that's their numbers, their Corsi numbers, their possession numbers have gone through the roof. And what an unbelievable sequence leading to that goal.
It finishes off by Josh Morrissey moving sides on the point, and then he moves up the wall and puts a pass cross ice for a one tee for Dustin Byfuglien, and Jimmy Howard looks ridiculous. He's not set. So Dustin Byfuglien gets his fifth right on the doorstep from Josh Morrissey, and Joel Armia would get the secondary assist on that one.
Joel Armia's game has improved tremendously the last few games. He's in a bit of a drought for a while there, and right around this time, this is where he's found his legs a little bit. He's drawn a few penalties lately just by being big and strong and being powerful in the corners and holding onto that puck for a little longer. He's drawn a few hooks. And
Detroit gets one back. This is about a minute 10 later after the Winnipeg third goal. So they're up 3-1. It goes to 3-2 because after Kyle Connor is in the high slot and just misses glove side, it creates a 3-on-2 for the Wings the other way. And Nyquist makes a couple nice moves in the corner and puts it out front. It goes off a skate and Anthony Mantha puts it low blocker side on Helly. He gets his 21st of the year. Anthony Mantha, 21 goal scorer for the Detroit Red Wings. And Nyquist, who had a pretty good game. I thought Nyquist was one of the guys that was playing really well for Detroit. 3-2 game. It doesn't stop there, though. The Jets get that goal back as after Howard has made a huge blocker side save as Kyle Connor set up. The next rush, Nick Ehlers brings it into the zone on a stretch pass, is sent over to Laine, and he goes roof daddy blocker side from the wing to the dot. So he just comes in, gets in that dot spot, his 33rd second of this game.
If you want to write Ehlers down a theme, write down that Patrick Laine scored a lot of goals from in tight, at the dot, in the slot, in the stretch where he's been going off insane. Guys are creating that space by driving the puck deep, and he's doing a good job of playing hide and go seek very often with the defense and just popping into the lane at the right time, and the guys are looking for him and he's been bearing it in tight. People have been talking left and right about how good his skating has been. More than speed, I think it's just quickness. It's quick decision making and not hesitating and being aggressive, and yeah, just another time of Laine's laser.
So that made it 4-2. The Jets actually outshot the Detroit Red Wings 19-5 in this period. They put a lot of shots up on the board. Before the second ends, Matt Hendricks gets it down to Kopp, and there's a back pass to Armia, and he's stoned by Howard. Really good high-end chance. Surprising Armia wasn't able to bury that one, too. Good play, but high-end scoring chance. The Jets couldn't get one more before the period. Between the second and third, we actually were informed while the Jets were playing, Steve Mason was doing a conditioning stint with the Manitoba Moose that weekend. So he actually got into a game, ended up getting the win, but gave up 4 goals. They were making mention of that because he was, doing the conditioning stint and then joined the team on the road trip after the first road game. But more on that later. Detroit ends up getting a goal in the third period to make it a 4-3 final. The game is on around the 14:31 mark. Daly gets a pass and works his way to the slot. Puts it through traffic on Helly. Trevor Daly, 8th from Cronwall and Bertuzzi. But the Jets kind of keep it going and hold on for the win. Couple of huge saves by Helly near the end of the game, too, to hold on to the win. The Jets, however, in that second period kind of put this game away and then went into lockdown mode in the third. 42-33 shots for Winnipeg. Detroit was 1-for-1 on the power play. Winnipeg was 0-for-3, if you want to know that. Laine, Ehlers, Stastny had more ice time than Perreault, Russell, Little, and Shifley, Connor, and Wheeler were the most ice time minutes for the forward. Boff, Morrissey, Myers all over 20 minutes, and then Cooley had 17. Sherratt and Morrow just under 15 minutes, 14-15 minutes apiece. For the Winnipeg Jets. They beat Detroit 4-3. Any final thoughts on the Detroit game? Last game at home before they go on the longest road trip of the season.
Not much, really, outside of the fact that Detroit really doesn't look like a team that is way outside of the playoff picture. They played the Jets hard this year and thought the Jets were opportunistic. They had that second period that was incredible, but I thought it was a good game overall. Like you said, Helly had to make some big saves at the end to close out the game.
That looks like they just got behind the eight ball. Maybe they've had some injuries. I haven't been really following Detroit all that much this year either, other than I know they're making an effort. Kind of, the way Winnipeg was a couple years ago, where we're playing the younger guys, going through the growing pains, inserting them in, but still have some veteran leadership, like the Zetterbergs and the Cronwalls. And they probably, they may not be around by the time the Wings turn it around, but the Wings are, doing the draft and develop thing.
They've got some pieces. Mantha got a goal in this game. Athanasiou is a player with tons of speed and skill. Oh, yeah. And then can't forget about Larkin.
Yeah, Larkin's a good player.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a changing the guard right now, but in a couple of years, they're going to be good.
That's what I forgot. Forgot my pun about that.
Let's hear it.
15-15 of the third, right before Detroit gets that third goal. They get a break on a stretch pass, and Helly's in good position. Not happy to Athanasiou.
Jesus.
I want to get Paul Romanek a run for his money.
Yeah, Warren likes sweet buns, and you like the sweet puns. There you go. Yeah. Not bad, man. Not bad.
I was thinking of Romanek because I have to listen to this guy on the Carolina game. Hometown hockey Sunday night. Jets start 6-game, 11-day road trip. They're in the midst of that right now while we're doing this on the following Sunday. Carolina 29-25-11, fifth in the Metro. Two wins, including a 3-1 win over the Devils. 4-4-2 in their last 10 going into this game. Carolina 16-11-6 at home. Winnipeg 14-10-7 on the road and improving. Interestingly enough, the real big stat that the Carolina Hurricanes are good at was the faceoff. They were first in the league going into this game. They are no longer first in the league. I'm going to bring up that first in the league stat for faceoffs with a different team by the time we get to that game. Jets were sitting fifth at that. Everything else, though, 26th for goals for, 19th for goals against, 21st for the power play and PK. But Carolina is battling with Columbus, Florida for the last wildcard spot in the East, and we're 1 point out going into this game. Carolina has Cam Ward in net, 19-9-4 on the year, 2.60 goals against average, 9-10 save percentage, couple shutouts. Helly now is at 33-10-8 with his 6 shutouts. What did you think of the Carolina Winnipeg game?
The first goal of the game, when he picks Skinner's pocket on the right boards and makes an absolutely beauty death sauce pass. I actually thought it was Stastny off the bat, 25 and 27. I had a Bayek moment when I was texting a buddy there, but beauty pass to Laine in the slot, and he rips another snapshot. That's just how things have been going lately. So really love that that third line. He's been kind of playing like our first line lately. I've noticed the last few games, actually, it seems like the first and second line have been struggling a little bit to put the puck in the back of the net, and you got Laine, no problems.
Play before the play. The Zed Ehlers takes that away from Skinner, and they had Skinner's parents in one of the intermissions on the show. They did a little profile on Skinner, because I guess whatever hometown he's from, that's where Ron McLean and the rest of the crew was for hometown hockey. So it was very Jeff Skinner. But Jeff Skinner, apparently, other than Tyler Seguin, is the guy that scored the most goals out of that 2010 draft class.
Yeah, love Skinner. Yeah. When we were talking pre-trade deadline, I was saying that would be a piece. I've always kind of envisioned him wearing a Winnipeg Jets jersey. I like what he brings to the table. And like you said, the play before the play, Nikolaj Ehlers last little while, he gets a lot of flack for, you know, defensive lapses here and there. Same with Patrick Laine. When they do make plays, those seem to get lost in the wash with whatever happens after. But really good job to get the Jets started in this game.
Paul Stastny has taken those two under his wing now, and they are just playing better and better. I think Nick Ehlers' game, since Paul Stastny's come over, he's just been harder on the puck, and he's not giving up on plays. And it's like Paul Stastny's basically made Nick Ehlers want to play better.
Seems like they flipped the switch on since Stastny's arrived. I don't know if it's the chatter on the bench, some of the things he's saying to them, but it does seem like the kids have stepped up their attention to detail and are making a lot more plays on the defensive side of the puck that are leading to these great offensive opportunities. And Paul Stastny, outside of his goals and assists, it's the little things that he brings to the table. It's little pick plays in this stretch of games. There are three really big pick plays that he does, that he gets away with, kind of veteran moves that aren't quite interference, but give a little bit extra space for Patrick Laine to get that shot off, or to allow Nikolaj Ehlers to do a little bit more, you know, weaving and dealing.
Yeah, space and time. Patrick Laine's 34th opens the scoring. Carolina does get one near the end of the period, but prior to that, as Laine has a multi-goal game again, he also puts one 8-21 off the bar, and he beats Ward clean. Can't remember, was it Greg Milne? Is it Greg Milne that was doing color? I don't know who was doing color for the Sportsnet. He beat Ward clean. Ward didn't have a chance on that. And even at 7:56.
Did he say that he made the save when it actually hit the bar?
Yeah, yeah. Romanek, and then it was whoever was doing color was like supporting that idea that Ward.
Even though on the replay, it's obvious that didn't happen. Yeah, I was laughing
clean.
About that.
Yeah, yeah. Beat him clean. And you hear post at 7:56 when Laine takes another shot again. We don't get a good replay of that. So a couple chances. Teuvo Teravainen. Carolina had just been finishing a power play that the Jets had taken. Morrissey had gone off for slashing. Teravainen got it from the corner. He puts it net front, and just as a power play expires, it goes off Kulikov, who's defending Stahl, and goes into the net. So Teravainen gets his 19th from Aho and Falk, which would be three of the guys that, in addition to Skinner, really the building blocks of the Carolina franchise, if we really want to talk about it. Aho and Teravainen are Finns, which I got reminded during this broadcast a lot that they're from Finland. So it's a 1-1 tie after one period of play. Second period, the Jets get in front. And again, it's another Patrick Laine goal. This is the one where you're talking about Stancy making picks. The Jets get on the power play. The Jets win the draw. The scramble comes down to Stancy. He gets it to Laine.
He kicks it right back out, and then Laine rips it from the top of the circle again, getting it in a good spot. Like, good luck for these goalies, because they keep finding him in the right spots this stretch. When he's been on a tear, he's been shooting a lot of pucks from high-end scoring chance areas.
And he put it through him again, and then it went 5-hole on Ward. So Ward was also screened on it. And Laine's been doing that beautifully lately, using whoever defender is in front of him to create a screen. So he gets a power play marker, 35th of the year. The Jets are up 2-1. There's a couple more high-end scoring chances for the Winnipeg Jets in the second period at around the 5-minute mark. Rask prevents Ehlers putting home a puck in the blue paint, and then Stastny tries a wraparound. After that, Dustin Byfuglien pinches in and gets it on net on a pass from Stastny. They were just buzzing around. Good chances. Ward holds it down. And no, I'm not confused. There's a defenseman on Carolina who has the last name Rask. Not to be confused with Tuukka, who plays goal for the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, that's a great stick look by Rask on that play. Otherwise, that's in the back of the net all day, every day by Ehlers.
Jets outshoot Carolina Hurricanes 17-4 in the second, 27-13 after two periods. They were carrying the play to the Carolina Hurricanes. They go up 3-1. You know what? Maybe we shouldn't skip over this part before that goal is scored. Early in the third, Brian Little does a great back check, lifts Jeff Skinner's stick, and breaks up a Carolina rush. That's one of those plays, and there's been a few back checks. You know, as much as you've been talking about Brian Little and that second line with Roslow and Perreault maybe not having as much offense lately, it seems to me by Stastny, Ehlers, and Laine really is the number two line.
I mean, it's connected to Adam Lowry being out. Missing Adam Lowry from the lineup, losing that checking shutdown line. Brian Little's line's taken on some of that responsibility, and that was a perfect example of a player that plays a 200-foot game. Good on Brian Little. Amazing back check. Very similar to Rask that we just mentioned by the Hurricanes. And those are the plays you need to make if you want to win games, especially in the playoffs.
At 9:54, and this is interesting because it's around the halfway point of the third period. And there's been a couple games on this road trip where this has happened. At this point, it's a 2-1 game. And the Jets are playing really well. And you just have that feeling, oh, they're going to get that extra insurance goal and go from there. And this game, they did that again. And it's Laine keeping it in. And then there's a pinch by Ben Sherratt. And his shot goes off the crossbar. It then hits the ref. And it goes over to Paul Stastny, who puts it into an open net. Really, Ward has no idea where this puck is bounced to. I don't even think he saw Sherratt's shot. He definitely did not get a piece of Sherratt's shot. And Stastny gets his 14th and second, actually, as a Winnipeg Jet now.
And once again, it was the play before the play. You know, we just talked about Nikolai Ehlers earlier, the impact playing with Stastny has had. And here's another prime example of Patrick Laine being really hard on the puck. He had two players on, Hurricane players, and he stymies their clearing attempt and outbattles both of them. And then on their next attempt up the boards, Ben Sherratt comes flying in, takes away the wall, blocks the puck, and then goes with the puck up the side before ripping it off the border, like you said, hitting off the ref. I mean, you can't, that was a crazy bounce, and then going directly to Stastny, who bangs it into the gaping cage. But that all happens by hard work at the opposition's blue line by Patrick Laine, Sherratt making a very good pinch. Huge parts of that play.
Carolina with 4:12 left, Jordan Staal takes it upon himself to try and go into the Jet zone 1-on-2. Morrissey's able to get it off of his stick, but it doesn't get out of the zone. Slavin gets a point shot, and then there's a big rebound, and it comes back out to Jordan Staal, who's able to put it in short side on Helly, and I'm sure Helly would want that one back. But Staal gets his 15th from Slavin and McGinn, and it's a 3-2, but that's as close as Carolina gets on it, and the Jets are able to finish off the game.
Worth noting, with 40 seconds left in the game, with the goalie pulled, an absolutely massive shoulder save on Falk's 1-team. You know, with a game that tight,
off the faceoff, which you kind of might be mad about Tyler Myers for flipping it out at an empty net and creating one of two icings that the Jets had very late.
Yeah, you prefer a little chip off the boards in that spot again. I'm sure Paul Maurice, you know, had a little talk with him after the game. Nothing huge, it happens. Sometimes you go for it, and if that goes in the net, we don't talk about it. But, you know, in that sequence, in that play, if you have another opportunity, that's got to go safely off the boards. Get it out of the zone.
Carolina 35-23 were outshot on the shots on goal for the game.
You said prior to this game the Hurricanes were top dogs when it comes to the faceoffs.
Yeah, and the Jets finished 57.8%.
And the Jets have been doing that a lot lately, even more so since Paul Stastny joined the ranks, just dominating in the dot.
Stastny had more ice time than Brian Little. Patrick Laine had more ice time than Jack Roslovic. Matty Perreault did have more ice time than Nick Ehlers. And I believe I would want to say that we might factor in the power plays for that stat. But again, and we're talking seconds of each other. We're running these lines, at least when Scheifele was playing with Wheeler and Connor, they were still doing the top minutes, but these two lines are getting next to the same amount of ice time right after. 15 seconds difference between Little and Stastny.
Well, that's the difference between having a top six and a bottom six. No longer have a top six, bottom six. Now you got three scoring lines. And when Patrick Laine is as hot as he is, when Ehlers is playing the way he is, and you know what Stastny has brought to that line, you got to give him more ice time. They're producing. So yeah, good on Paul Maurice.
Paul Maurice also was really happy with Dmitry Kulikov's game in this game and actually had run up his minutes. So he was second to Dustin Byfuglien in the minutes. Byfuglien did over 25. Cooley was just 24-27. Tyler Myers and Josh Morrissey had 21 to 22 minutes, respectively. Sherratt played almost 16, and Morrow played just under 10. So Cooley would have picked up some extra ice time in there somehow and had a really good game, even though he wasn't on the score sheet. The defense actually did a lot of creating the offense in this game against Carolina. That's one of the takeaways I got from that too. And I think that's a positive going forward. Getting that D healthy would be really nice. Let's be honest, we've kind of had nine guys. Six guys are always able to play of the nine. That seems to be how the Jets have done it this season. And actually, prior to that, you could say eight guys up until getting Morrow. Morrow's the extra body, so there's now nine D-men for six spots.
As a Jets fan, the excitement of seeing Jacob Trouba back in the lineup and having our a healthy six, can that ever happen? Can we have a healthy six? Can we not have to bring in our healthy scratches and call people up on our D end? If that could happen for the playoffs, that'd be unbelievable, because it's going to be tough for Sherratt to stick in and Kulikov. I think those are the two guys that are going to be fighting for that last spot, but everybody's played great. It's a good problem to have for the Jets.
And you look at the playoff experience they said that Morrow had from last year, and yet if Sherratt keeps playing as well as he does, and Toby, when he is healthy, has been playing really well, and if Cooley's healthy, you know, those are the guys. Like, Morrow's the odd guy out.
Well, there was a time that I thought the best situation for the Jets D would be to have Tobias out of the lineup and to keep Sherratt in prior.
And Pullman, yeah, I think so.
But now, upon reflection, and obviously we watched Pullman, he came up recently to play with the Jets once again. Not that I don't like his game, but Tobias has been playing some of the best hockey he's played in years. And, you know, I don't really want him out of the lineup anymore. I think the Jets are better with him in the lineup. The record indicate that.
Yeah, it does.
You know, a few podcasts back when you broke down the stats of how the Jets do with him in the lineup, they are substantially better with him in the lineup than having him out of the lineup. And him and Buff have been a great tandem since they've been reunited. And then you throw in, yeah, the great play of Ben Sherratt. This game, Maurice is talking about how great Kulikov has been playing as of late. He's a physical force. Jacob Trouba is an impact defenseman to bring back in the lineup. So similar to the forward situation, you know, depth is a good thing, but it means that somebody's popping out of the lineup when playoffs roll around.
And really, at the point of it, you're going to be saying, is it going to be Kulikov or Sherratt if everybody's healthy? If we go back, if Trouba comes back and he goes back with Morrissey, and if Enstrom's healthy, he can play with Byfuglien. That puts Myers down to your third pairing, playing with either Dmitry Kulikov or Ben Sherratt. That's it. No Pullman, no Morrow.
Connor Hellebuck's going to love that.
But it's nice to have those extra bodies, for sure. That's definitely an asset. So the Jets at this point had now won back-to-back games. So they had won in Detroit, won in Carolina. Two-game win streak after the loss with Nashville. First game on the road trip is a win. And then they go into Tuesday into New York to take on the Rangers. And the Rangers, well, when they were announcing that they were going to blow up their team before the trade deadline, came in here and played a really good game against the Jets at home. So the Rangers had beat Winnipeg the last time they were in town. Now, the Rangers, having admitted that they played really well against Winnipeg that game, were 3-6-1 in their last 10 going into this. However, they had won three games, and they were on the road before they came home to play the Jets here in New York. They won those three games against Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton. Maybe there should have been an asterisk.
That's worth noting. Vancouver, Besser's out, bad. Oilers, bad.
And Calgary without their...
Flames,
Without their goalie. Yeah, without Mike Smith too, right? They didn't do anything at the deadline to help out their goaltending either.
That makes that win streak a win streak.
Yeah.
And hey, they had a couple of those guys. I mean, they just got rid of Grabner and they got rid of Nash, but they still have Zuccarello. He's one of the guys sticking around, and he had a very good game against the Jets.
Kevin Shattenkirk was not in the lineup. He's injured for the New York Rangers. The other guy that's injured for the New York Rangers was Andre Pavlak. Not that he would have played net, but as a backup, he's not even in. Henrik Lundqvist plays net for the Rangers in this game. 25-21-5, 2.89, 9-16, 2 shutouts. And from what I've heard after the trade deadline, remember I said I can't believe he's staying? He actually asked to stay. They did send him down in the office, and he says, no, I want to stick it out and be here while you guys retool this.
You got to respect. He's been there his entire career, yeah, and he wants to stick it out to the end. So you got to really respect that. And he played a hell of a game against the Jets once again.
Yeah, he did.
Andre Pavlik, does he have that Carey Price flu when it comes to playing the Jets? Seems like he's sick a lot, or he's injured a lot when the Jets roll into town.
Well, he was injured even before this too, so it's
don't a rush coming back soon, though. That's what I'm saying.
And you know, they had moved Ranta and then picked up Pavlik, and that hasn't really worked out. The Rangers have had the way that Steve Mason has kind of had his season here with us. Pavlik's really kind of been in that same situation with injuries and not having a good start. Not that they were expecting Andre Pavlik to come in and beat out Lundqvist for the job.
Kind of similar but completely different situations. Mason was brought on to be the guy, and Pavlik was supposed to be the quote-unquote safety net for Lundqvist to give him a day off here and there, but hasn't quite worked out.
Going into this game, game two on the road trip, Laine was on an 8-game point streak. 10 goals, 6 assists, 16 points, and multi-goal games. And I remember joking in a podcast that Patrick Laine was going to get to 35 and then blow out his new record. Actually, I joked to you, that's the game he was going to get 5. Well, he didn't do that, but this game is all about Patrick Laine and Steve Mason. His first start since January 9th, a win versus Buffalo, and that was like a 6-4 win. So he didn't play exceptional. And so he comes into this game 3-6-1. I would tell you his save percentage and goals against average, but because it was so late when they decided they were putting him in, I couldn't even pull those stats. I have the post-game stats on what it is for the year for him. But we're going to wait till after the game to actually talk about that.
And you know, for a guy who's had bad luck all year, this game, you know, the luck was on his side a little bit. He played pretty well, but he got a couple fortuitous bounce. So, you know, good on Mason. This is a big game for him. As the aforementioned Zuccarello, at the 5:40 mark, he does a sick dipsy doodle play, outside-inside move through the slot, and he goes for a wraparound. Mason's down and out, and this is about to be the first goal of the game and put the Jets behind the eight ball, but Ben Chiarot, my boy, who's gone streaking for 5 games, makes another great play, a great defensive play on the goal line, getting a stick in the way and being strong on a stick, ricochets off his stick, hits the post, pops out, and it's still 0-0.
Cody McLeod and Matt Hendricks scrapped at 17:45 and got 5 minutes each for fighting. And Hendricks that's his 5th fight this season, and they pointed out that he only fought once last year in the games that he played with Edmonton. But his role's a little different now, and him being in the lineup now is dependent on things like this, anything and everything that he can do.
Tanev's speed and hitting, that's Tanev's game. That's how he leaves his stamp, and I think Hendricks is that guy. He'll scrap a guy for you. He'll lay the big hits, and I've noticed it too. The last few games, he's brought back that physicality element. He's sacrificing the body, and he's trying to prove why come playoff time. Unlike last year, he was with the Oilers and he got sat on the pine for the playoffs. He wants to be a player every day. Even though he said all the right things, you know he wants to play in the playoffs.
At 12:22, Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler collide, going for a loose puck in the neutral zone. I do not believe, having watched this game twice, I do not believe that's when Scheifele is injured. Not even at all. I don't think that relates anything to why he's out of the lineup right now.
I feel like it maybe tweaked something because he did look like he was hurting on the play.
The Jets go up 1-0 in the first, and that's how the period ends.
Stastny rolls up the sidewall and does one of those subtle pick plays that I was telling you about on the Rangers defender. Well, he drops the puck off to Laine at the point. He does a little subtle pick play on the guy, giving Laine room to walk into the slot, that extra couple feet to get closer right around the dot. And from the faceoff dot, he rips it clean past Lundqvist. Not too many people beat Henrik Lundqvist quick. And he talked about it after the game, about both goals that happened this game, about how Laine is deceptive, how it looks like he's going to go far side, and then he goes short side, And that's what he does on this play as well, ripping it past him.
So Patrick Laine does get his 36th of the year. That has the Jets up 1-0. And Paul Stastny gets the primary assist. Dustin Byfuglien gets the secondary assist on that first goal. Will mention to you, prior to that goal being scored, that Scheifele had a shift where he was at about the 6:55 mark. And he had bumps with Kreider on that shift. And about 6:19, he had a bump with D'Angelo in the New York Ranger corner. He stayed in the game after those two hits and had a pair more shifts, but those were notable hits that he took after the collision in the first period. We'll continue into the second and give you updates on even more of them. I just don't think the collision with Wheeler is where the shoulder or collarbone is bothering him. I think there's a couple more hits and some cross checks that he takes before he leaves this game that probably are responsible for it. That Jets goal came right before the period ended at 56 seconds left in the period as well. So timely goal for the Jets. Late period goal.
And a backbreaker for the Rangers. In a game that they were about to go into the second period 0-0, which for them,
the Jets being
at the top of the league and being outshot, you know, that's a moral victory going into the second period. So very deflating for Laine once again to score the first goal of the game for the Jets, which he's been doing a lot of lately.
Yeah, 16-9 were the shots for Winnipeg. In the second period, there are a couple of plays. Steve Mason, you know, has to make some saves in here on some high-end scoring chances. This is 11:32 for Hayes. He deflects a point shot in the slot. It just misses the short side. And then Kreider at 10:22 is left alone in front off a draw. And his shot, Mason gets his stick on it to make the save. So couple of chances, and Mason has to make some big saves. It wasn't like he didn't have to make some big stops in this game for the win. You know, for the most part, the Rangers were held in check.
At the 9-minute mark, my boy Ben Chiarot once again gets the puck at his own blue line, takes it up to the Ozone blue line, and then he does a drop bank pass off the boards to Laine, who once again cuts to the middle aggressively, uses his speed, and goes back against the grain short side and beats Lundqvist clean again.
To the blocker side. Now, post-game, Lundqvist was asked about Laine. He was asked about the goals he gave up. And he admitted he thought the entire time on this one, Laine was going glove. He kept saying, I thought he was going glove. And all of a sudden, he's like, man, I look silly. It's gone on me on blocker side.
And it's a subtle thing, but it's a slight roll of the wrist that Laine does. And you can see it on the replay. It's that little tiny delay that he does, and it looks like the way his stick is that he's going to go on the far side, but then he just a quick little twist of the wrist, and he snipes it back the other way.
Ben Chiarot and Joe Moore get assists on that. Patrick Laine's second of the game, 37th of the year. A little over 10 seconds later, Josh Morrissey puts a point shot. That goes off the post, and he beats Lundqvist clean on that as well. So the Jets continue to get the pressure on. 7-11, Scheifele's on the ice. And this is where, my opinion, this is when I think Scheifele really does get hurt. He takes a heavy cross check from Mark Stahl into the boards and is then cross checked as he's falling to the ice. Now, he does continue to play after this. Those Mark Stahl and that hit into the boards and the cross check is on that shoulder. And we're talking collarbone, shoulder, and we'll get to that too, because Ken Weeb said it in the intermission between the second and the third. When he decides to take himself out of the game, if you're reading lips, he says collarbone.
Yeah, that's where I think I read the same article. And he said collarbone, and it was hard to breathe. And that's not something you want to hear from Scheifele at this point in the season, coming back from injury. Mark Stahl, huge cross checks. No penalty on the play either, once again. And it's noticeable that other teams are punishing Mark Scheifele as often as they can. Just like Big Buff will go after the Taylor Halls and the Tyler Sagans, Mark Scheifele seems to be that guy this year where guys are taking a few more liberties on him.
Well, but he plays physical too now. So he's not afraid to go in the corners. He's not afraid to give a hit, take a hit. He plays a game as a power forward now. And, you know, the Mark Scheifele, when he first came into the league,
He's definitely not a perimeter player anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does get his nose dirty. Every now and then you can see him. He's got a little bit of an agitator side to him too, I think, a little bit. And yeah, guys, just know Scheifele's a big piece of the puzzle here in Winnipeg. If you get a chance, like you said, Mark Stahl knocks him to the ground, and it's not good enough to hit him once, but give him that one little extra cross check.
And there was no call on that. That should be a penalty. But he doesn't get that call. And you know what? It's pretty much the next shift that he has to bump with O'Gara. And at 3:50, then Shifley goes to the dressing room, as we said, upper body. And he's talking about the right collarbone. And yeah, having trouble breathing. Not good.
It is important to note for Jets fans that there's no structural damage. It looks like this is going to be a short-term thing. So we should see Shifley back in the lineup sooner rather than later.
It may even be before they get home. I have a sneaky suspicion that Mark Shifley plays for against Nashville.
Well, here's hoping, because that team's four lines deep. We need Shifley.
Prior to Shifley leaving the game, there was a 3-on-2. And again, Ben Chiarot had a beautiful give and go with Matty Perreault. And then Perreault just got in too close to be able to do something with it. He's been a little snake bitten lately, Matty Perreault, but not anything wrong with his, you know, complete game, and nothing wrong with his effort, everything else that he's doing. He's just not finding the net right now. And again, Chiarot, more great play from him in this game. Now, high-end scoring chance, 3:35. VC shoots it just wide of the net, but it comes around. Gorello is able to shoot the puck, but he shoots it back into Mason with a wide open net as he's net side. So he has a whole net open. It goes off of Mason's skate, but then Mason's able to get his stick on it and pull it back underneath him. Great save. Zuccarello's looking at the heavens.
Great save / extremely lucky, because it goes off his right foot that was underneath of him, his right back skate. It was more like Zuccarello found Mason, not Mason finding the puck on that play. But you know what? Guys had a lot of bad luck all year. So, you know, you got to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. So Mason will say he knew it was there the whole time.
Zuccarello just snake bitten in this game on his chances. He was, and probably you could say now, he would be one of their top forwards now going forward.
Yeah, he leads their team in points. Yeah, and he did prior to the trade deadline as well.
Just going to note this right before the second ends. Blake Wheeler gets a cross-checking penalty on Shea in front of the Rangers net.
Oh, 2:30 left in the play, 2-on-1, Stastny to Ehlers. Massive glove save by Lundqvist. That save was incredible. And another nice little play showing the chemistry between Stastny and Ehlers.
28-19 Jets leading in shots after two periods of play. Rangers actually have 22 seconds left in the power play to start the second period. They did not do anything on that power play. Not even worth noting. I don't even think they got a shot on that during that power play. As it expires, Kyle Connor streaks in and just fires wide. So he had a chance to get it on net. Brian Little at 14:08 gets tripped up. There's no call on that. And then Zuccarello and Little continue to battle behind the net. And then they both go off. So Little gets a slashing penalty for slashing Zuccarello after he trips him for no call. And then Zuccarello gets a roughing call. I just like the fact that Brian Little he's been healthy this year, and although his numbers aren't as good as they have been, his two-way game has been phenomenal. And he factors in. You know, he doesn't take any shifts off when he's out on the ice. Gilmore fired wide on a 2-on-1 for the Rangers on that 4-on-4. That was a big thing. And then at 12:31, Kyle Connor has a high-end scoring chance because he catches up to the puck the other way after that 2-on-1. Lundqvist outweighs Connor as he goes cross-crease, and there's a really nice pad save. That's the one that I really thought was Connor's big chance in the game.
Another big save by Lundqvist. Did a little spread eagle save there. Big save. This game could have been a lot bigger score for the Jets if not for Lundqvist standing on his head.
New York Rangers end up outshooting the Jets finally in the third period, 12-6. Winnipeg does outshoot them 34-31 in the game. And after that Kyle Connor scoring chance, really the big highlight of the game, even though the Rangers pulled a goalie, is that Patrick Laine gets his first hat trick of the year, and a nice play with a faceoff just outside the Jets' blue line as the puck ended up in the Jets' bench. So they have a faceoff just outside their blue line. And Wheeler wins the draw, and Laine lets it go behind him, then turns around and sends it down into the open net. You know what? There isn't a guy that scores prettier empty net goals than Patrick Laine. Anyways, he gets his third and 38th of the year at this point into an empty net. And like I said, he's still making a really nice play to score. Remember he had the backhander empty net goal too, back a number of games back, where he made it look so easy, but he just backhand sauced it once he had space. This is the same thing too. It's like he lets this purposely go by him so he can turn around. The winger that's with him is now out of the way, and he's got an open lane to just fire it down the ice.
Yeah, clean win by Wheels. And then, yeah, a bit of a spinorama, like, insta shot by...
But on purpose.
Yeah, it was a beauty.
Like,
and also, you know, not to Jack Tin shtick here, but when it comes to puns, but hats off to Paul Maurice when it comes to the Hattie, getting him that Hattie. Laine actually was going to leave the ice after the previous shift, and Maurice sent him back out there and said, no, kid, go get your Hattie, without saying it.
Yeah, natural hat trick, first of the season.
And in New York, youngest ever to get a natural hat trick. So for a building and a city that's had a team as long as New York has had, that's the first time ever that someone has gotten a natural hat trick as a teenager in Madison Square Garden.
Fourth multi-goal game this season for Patrick Laine.
And first hat trick. Which we've been talking about forever. Every game, we've just been waiting for Laine's first. So now that he got it out of the way, hopefully catches up to last year and gets a couple more.
Fourth hattie of his career. The interesting thing about that one, remember, is back in the podcast, I said he was going to get to 35, and then that's when he was going to get this game. But I also said he was going to get 5 and be at 40. So he did half of what I said he was going to do when I was making that ridiculous prediction.
And had he got the 5, maybe a Safeway winner? Or does that only happen at home? I always forget about that. It's
only on TSN broadcast. So technically, if he would have got 5 in this one, and he did have a post, he could have had 5 in this game.
If anybody's going to get 5 goals in a game and somebody's going to win $1 million, it's going to be because of Patrick Laine, more likely than not.
Will be Patrick
Laine. Like, bettors money, you're not putting it on Matthew Perreault again. You know, who knows? Maybe a Shifley, maybe an Ehlers will come close one day.
The odds on favorite would be that it's going to be Laine, but there would be some irony in it being another guy. You know, like all of a sudden Joel Armia just has... Like,
can you imagine the payout in Vegas? Because you can do all this prop bets. Like you can bet on heads or tails at the Super Bowl, and they have all these weird, like, you can bet on shit about, like, something that the singer does in the anthem. You can for sure make a bet on Patrick Laine scoring 5 goals in the game, and what kind of payout would that be? I wonder what the Vegas odds are on that. That'd be pretty crazy to look up.
16:39, a nice time for Laine. Actually, Stastny, Laine, and Ehlers were all over 16 minutes. Wheeler ended up playing 17, Connor just under 17 minutes. Little had about 16, Perreault's just under 16. Shifley only played 10:44. Before he left the game, and Rosel had 14:22. Armia would have picked up some extra ice time because of Shifley going down, because he was moved up, and he ended up with 12:31. Kopp and Hendy underneath that. Buff was second on defense minutes at just under 24 minutes. Myers was just under 25. Kulikov had 22. Morrissey had 20 minutes. Sherratt and Morrill right around the 14 minute mark for ice time. So there you go on the game with the New York Rangers. 3-0. Very strong game. It's about as complete game as the Jets have played in a while.
And once again, not as dominant on the dot as they were against Carolina, but 55% to 45%. Once again, the Jets come out on top. That's an important stat.
Oh, Mason picks up his first shutout of the year. 34th of his career.
And first as a Jet.
Which is nice. Also, the fact that Connor Hellebuck caught the night off and the Jets pick up the W is really nice too. Subsequently, Steve Mason goes back on injured reserve after getting a shutout win. And there was talk that this happens in the game. Now, I should make a mention of that. If you guys still have this game PVR. If you look at 4:46 of the third period, Mason was coming out of the net and he gloves a puck that was going wide, but he just wants to slow the play down. So he decides he's going to trap it and hold it for a face-off. But you can see as a play stop that he's laboring to get back up. And it looked like something was nagging him, lower body. And I noted it. But the reason I noted that is, again, I'm watching this game a second time after knowing who went out and what happened, which is why I still think the Mark Stahl cross checks are probably why Mark Scheifele's out and not the collision with Blake Wheeler. That's just my opinion. It's an upper body injury. It's not like I could even ask Paul Maurice to be like, oh, so was it exactly this play?
At this point, why even tell us? Like, upper body, lower body, just say he's out. We don't know how long. We'll let you know when. Because at this point, as a journalist interviewing him, why do we even ask anymore? You're just going to get a smirk and a smile and say, I'll let you know when I know, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's true. It's got to the point where earlier in the year, Ken Hitchcock was the one guy in Dallas who said, oh, nobody's, sending out guys to, like, key on guys that are injured. Nobody's really paying attention to it. And so he was of the opinion that everybody should just say exactly what it was. We can actually list that Jacob Trouba's listed as an ankle injury, not lower body injury. But I guess they realized that everybody knew it was the ankle, so they're like, oh, well, I guess we can say that it is the ankle.
I don't really care either way, but either tell us everything or just don't even bother. Like, it's not even worth the question, because I'm tired of hearing upper body, lower body injury. In baseball, they tell you exactly what happened. It's a different sport. NBA, they'll tell you what happened.
But there's no contact.
Even in the NFL, though, they don't say upper body, lower body. They tell you what actually happened. The NHL is the one that's the fucking James Bond secret agent about this shit. Born identity. Like, fucking tell us or don't tell us. Who cares anymore? Stop asking the same dumb questions. I mean, you're like me. You listen to every post game. Yeah. Some of these fucking questions already. Like, come up with an interesting train of thought or don't even fucking bother. That's just kind of my take on it.
I'm trying to remember if it was, and it definitely wasn't the New York post game. I think it was a Jersey post game. And one of the local media people in the scrum talking to Paul Maurice and asked a question and then gave three possibilities for the question you just asked. And so Maurice looked at him and said, yeah, it's a combination of all those three. Do you want the question answered or do you just want to tell the other coach what it is? The art of asking a good question is lost.
A lot of these questions, they're like, it's like they're filling the blank answers and they're punching in the answers for the coach and then expecting them to just be little puppets and say it right back. I noticed that too.
Maurice was asked if the rest of the Winnipeg Jets were trying not to score as much because they just figured that Patrick Laine was going to score all the goals for the team. And Maurice had to answer that question. So Maurice looks at him and is like, we're talking about NHL hockey players. They're not checking it in and they're definitely not just
sitting around waiting for Patrick to score.
Yeah.
Fuck it. Throw away your press badge and fucking find a new career. Yeah, that's why I love, like, Paul Maurice, one time he was interviewed and it was from a Winnipeg reporter. And what did he say? Paul Maurice says that he gets asked a weird question and he just cracks back at him that he's telling the truth and that he's only lied to them once this season. And he openly says this as a joke. Like, I lied to you once. I just love that about him. Because he's funny. He says everything with a smirk and a smile. He has his team's back and he's just got that in him. I like that. It's kind of like, ask a stupid question, get a stupid answer.
You're listening to the First Class Podcast, all things Winnipeg Jets hockey. Tim Bigelow and Warren Smith. Kind of wrap up the first part of this week's podcast, having now gone through the Rangers and Carolina and the home game versus Detroit. We'll come back in part two, look at the games in New Jersey and Philadelphia, and then queue up the last couple games of the road trip in Washington and Nashville before the Jets head home for another six-game homestand.